Love a rugby league same game multi? Then you've got to check out Picklebet same game multi. Watch your odds and payouts skyrocket when you combine your favorite team's markets, like head-to-head, first try scorer, and winning margin. Picklebet, the next-gen betting app and official sponsor of the NRL All-Stars podcast.
What are you really gambling with?
For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
Welcome to another episode of the NRL All-Stars podcast. Barndy here for Supercoach TLT round two. It's come along very quickly that we're in round two, and there's a lot of changes. There's a lot of interesting things that have popped up for TLT this week. And to chat about all of that as well as the round that was, got Billy back on board for 2 weeks running. Billy, welcome back to the All-Stars podcast, mate, here for round two. I really wanted to get you on because obviously you chatted about round one with me last week and I wanted to see how it panned out for you too. So welcome back, mate. And hopefully it was hopefully it's a decent round for you, but I think everybody I know went terrible. So it's probably not worth asking.
Yeah, I was going to say, mate, I was surprised you asked me back after round one. Maybe you didn't know my score. No, I was horrendous, mate. Same as everyone else, but I think I ended up about 100 points lower than everyone else. And I even managed to avoid captaining someone at 25 points. I did get to Ponga, so I sort of hit the nail on the head there a little bit. In hindsight, I was stressing about it Thursday, Friday, but yeah, a few left field choices didn't come out, mate.
Yeah, well, 50 points seemed terrible, but it ended up being pretty good. Well, I mean, Cleary and then Hines, I think, were 2 and 3 behind Ponga. So I mean, Ponga ended up pretty good on the weekend as far as, you know, the second week of round one games go. It was, I didn't even hit 900, so I mean, I had a terrible week as well. So I think it's always a good time to remind people as well, even the ones that have played this for a while, that round one really doesn't matter too much. Like the team that's first is like 500 points ahead of me, and it evens up very quickly. The first few rounds, there's so much movement, isn't there? So you can go up like 30,000 spots, you know, next week. I think that people need to not panic going into this week, and that's the number one goal. Don't panic when you're looking at the team list and the trades that you can start making now.
Yeah, you're right there. I think the only thing that's kind of frustrating, though, is you have round one where you try to pick some guys that are underpriced. Like, I'll give you an example. You know, picking Moses and taking a punt on his soft draw over Cleary. Now, Cleary obviously scored, you know, nowhere near what he normally would, and you go into that Eels game with him on 30 points after 15 minutes going, yes, here we go. And for him to end on 31, 32 points, now you're going into round two and round three with no advantage over Cleary and everyone else has him. So that fear factor starting to kick back in again.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that happened. You know, a lot of teams copped injuries as well, and you can't do anything about injuries. Like, you know, people can't get hung up on it being a bad score, because you couldn't have ever foresaw an injury. And, I mean, that happened to Moses. And, I mean, he would have gotten an extra, you know, extra boost of 10 points or something just from his kicking as well. So, I mean, you just can't tell. But it was a round where we did get a heap of tons, which was good. There was 9 players who tonned up. And really the top 10 players, you know, Reuben Garrick was 10th on 99 points, Bryce Cartwright first on 116. That whole top 10 from the first round of the season, none of them were 10% plus owned. So every one of them was a pod. Admittedly, some of them, like Latrell, were, you know, 9% owned. You had a few 9%ers, but yeah, everyone was a pod by the criteria. So that does flip around a bit, and people need to remember that a little bit as well. But there was some stars that stepped up. You know, Bryce Cartwright, 116 at 2.7% ownership is huge. But Latrell Mitchell obviously got the 110 in Vegas, and that ended up being the second best score. We did also see the first matchup-based carve-up in Supercoach for the year with what the Cowboys did. You know, they were the team that really carved up on the weekend. And you saw that with 3 Cowboys in the top 9 scores. Val Holmes at 3 with 108, Labor with 103, and Talangi at 101. So you have to, like, you see that, you go, well, you know, obviously that's proof that there is some stock you got to put in the draw, because if somebody's going to towel someone up, it's going to affect Supercoach, and you saw that with those three guys in there too. So quite interesting. Certainly for Neil Blake and a big one too, as someone who's almost 10% owned at 103. But I think that we can safely look at, you know, this top 10 and say there's going to be a lot of different players in that top 10 for this week, which is probably a good message for coaches for round one that, you know, maybe panicking and going, well, I want to get all these guys in. You know, it's just as likely that your superstar that you got in your team that scored 16 like Hines is going to be in the top 10 this week.
Yeah, I think the equilibrium will sort of come back this week. Like you said before, everything is sort of around the 10% or under 10%. So odds of everyone owning at least half a dozen of those, it's, you know, 10% by 10%. So I can't really see too many combinations of that. If you go and have a look at the some of the top 10 teams, I'm not sure if you've done that. They're very interesting. I think in the top 10 teams that I looked at this week, score-wise, there were at least three or four of them that had five or six nothing. Just to give you an indication as to what might happen. So usually you see round three, round four, things kind of even out. Might take an extra round now with people sort of adjusting to some of the lower scores. But, yeah, I think the guns will start firing again this week, mate, or at least some of the forwards start getting some match fitness. If you see some of the halves sort of get a bit more of that clutch attack off the foundation.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit of strategy before we go into market watch and then into round two. And look, strategy-wise, I think that one of the important things that I look at right now is planning my trades ahead. And I actually like thought about this a bit more once I sort of mentioned to Luke that I was going to look at trading Laybud in this week potentially. And Luke, who did the Knights team preview and is well-loved on the podcast, resident Knights fan, said to me, well, why are you trading him in this week? You know, you can wait a week and get, you know, wait and see, and you don't need to get him in this week. And my answer was, well, I can foresee already next week that I'm going to have two trades that I'm going to have to make. So I don't want to use a boost if I can help it, and I'm not going to use both my trades this week. So it probably makes more sense for me to get Laybud in a week early because I know I'm going to want him. He's also very playable in my centre wing playing Newcastle at home. And the next week I don't have the headache or needing to use a boost. And I think that that probably is a really good message, especially for new coaches, that, you know, there's two things that you got to remember, I think, at this point. One of them is, you know, what Luke said to me was ostensibly right for a lot of teams. You don't have to get someone in this week just because they looked great last week and just because they're going to make money, like Laybut looks to make money. You don't have to get him in this week because there's not going to be a price change. So certainly if you're looking at someone like Zach Laybut or one of these other guys that looks like they're going to make money and you're not going to play them, like, if you're not going to play them, don't get them in this week because what's the point? You're going to risk them maybe getting an injury or something and then all of a sudden, you know, you're stuck with them when you didn't need to, because the only reason you're getting them in is for their price rise next week if you're not starting them this week. But the opposite of that is also true, where it is if you are waiting too long on these guys, then you might not be able to get them all in. So write down the guys that you want to have in the next two rounds before price rises start and make sure that you've got a plan to get them in. Because for me, you know, I was the opposite with Laybut. I may need to get him in this week because I'm looking at my team going, there's two trades I need to make next week and Laybut isn't going to be one of them. So if I'm only going to use one trade this week, which is going to be my Spencer Lino out, I need to get Zach Laybut in this week because of, you know, the other two factors I'm going to have to trade out next week.
Yeah, I agree with that. Disagree slightly with the use of that one of the wildcard trades. I know you wanted to kick him up your sleeve. For me personally, we say this every year, there's 150,000 people you've got to beat, and 40 points could be a massive difference. I know it's early in the season, but I know for a fact that I've got to get May anyway. Like I think everyone's on that trade purely because I ended up taking the route with what do you call it, the bench dog as my starter. I was kind of expecting sort of 45 points, but to get sort of 31 points from your starting front row forward and knowing that we're going to get May anyway, kind of silly probably for me not to get him this week. But in order to do that, I need to make the third trade for my second one as a downgrade to what do you call it, Smitty's, whatever his name. I'm just short sort of 20, 30 grand. So it just kind of makes sense. You know what? Just make that third trade now and just get one of those sort of basement guys in the center three quarter, because Salmon did exactly what we thought he would. Like, played a ball playing lock type role around 20 kind of points. I really need to start in front row forward. So for me, it makes sense logically in mathematics just to utilize that third trade now, particularly off the back of what you just said as well. Next week, everyone's going to be peaky, but there could be injuries. You're going to need two trades for next week.
Yeah, I'm not against using the boost at all. Like, I used most of mine early last year to fix my team up, and I'm very much on board with the fact that the most important time for you to use boost is to fix your team at the start to make sure you get all the right cash rises, to make sure you fix any mistakes and all that type of stuff. So I'm not against using boost. I just don't need to with my team next week at the moment. So I'd rather, you know, obviously I think that you'd rather keep them if you don't need to use them. And for me, like whether I get Laybun in this week or next week, you know, if I do it next week, I have to use a boost. If I do it this week, I don't need to use one. So to me, I'm saving a boost by getting him in this week if I do it. So obviously every team is going to be very different as well. Certainly for your team, like if there's teams out there like yours, I wouldn't not use my second trade or not use a boost if I know I'm going to be short of players the next fortnight that I know that I have to get in, or if I need money like your team does and I have to use it. By all means, like if I was in that position, I would use it as well. I think it's just about balancing it. And I think that the best question to ask yourself is, do I have to make this trade this week? And there's going to be teams that say yes and teams that say no. And if you say no, then maybe you shouldn't be doing that trade. Like we're going to talk about players in a moment on the Market Watch, but I mean, Pierce Paul's a good example at Newcastle. Looked fantastic last week, but it's just one game and Lucas could be back the following week. And he's not going to change in price. And if you're not going to start him, then why are you rushing to get him this week? We get a free look, not just at his play this week and his role, but you also get a free look at TLT before price rises. And then you can make a decision. You know, so that's one where I think you don't have to do the decision this week. So if you're pushing yourself just to make that trade for the sake of it and you can fit it in next week, it's just safer to wait till next week on those sort of guys.
Yeah, agree. There's one. You mentioned this Labor kid a few times now. That's the one game I actually didn't see at all this weekend. My brother just turned up from Norway, kind of a surprise visit. So how do you say to him, mate, first round, really trying to look at all the players? Surprise visit was great. Went down, had a few beers, hung out. But, so I've completely missed that game. But I'm really interested when we get to the players to hear your take on how he performed. And he sounded like he was fantastic.
Oh, he really was. I fell in love with the centre for the first time this year. And we're going to talk about it now. Let's talk about Market Watch. So most traded out players and traded in players. Obviously, there's going to be some real easy ones. So the most traded out, Spencer Leenu is out, has to go. Joe Arrow, bad news for him. It's either 4 weeks or if he gets surgery, it's going to be probably closer to the season. Got to go. Palacia is on a bye with the Titans. He also didn't look very good and got dropped to the bench pre-game. That was one where I think it's probably, yeah, Billy, that's one where, you know, we've all got busy lives, I do too, so sometimes I miss right before kickoff, but that's a good example of, you know, in round one, you really need to be on it before kickoff, because when you see Palacio drop to the bench, you need to get him out into one of those other options that are playing after him if you can, and a lot of teams didn't do it, so he's going out. Beau Firmall, though, I want to talk to you about. So this is an interesting situation because I understand Beau Firmall's got the bye this week. And I mean, if it's like round 11 and you've gotten some use out of Firmall and he's got a bye and you need to score points, you just sort of go, look, I'm just going to trade him out and that's fine. I'm not going to get him back. But round two trade out of Beau Firmall. Now, I'm just going to put it a bit of a devil's advocate against trading him out because I don't have him and I was a bit worried about him, especially without him getting attacked and in a bad Titans team. But if someone has him in their team, Billy, it means that they decided that Beau Firmall was for them. And they were into Beau Firmall, and they full well knew when they started with him that he was going to have a round two bye, and they were happy to hold him. Now, he scored 34 points against the Dragons, was disappointing, but he still played the 80 minutes, and we've only seen the one game, and you already knew that he had the bye. So, I mean, there is other options, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't trade him out. Like, he didn't look great, okay? So maybe you're just going to chalk it up to a mistake, but this is one of those ones, I think, Billy, where you go, well, if you just trade him out because he's on a bye, you already sort of knew that. So you're sure that you want to get rid of Beau Firmall at this point?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. But for me, I'm trading him out this week, and it's not because he's on the bye. I would have given him a little bit more runway for the next few weeks. The reason why I bought him was because of that mid-price range, nice draw, and the fact that you need someone around that price point. The reason I'm trading him out is because I didn't pick up Smithies, and the reason I didn't pick up Smithies is because I know what Ricky's like. He generally played the lock forward, 40, 50 minutes, and this guy just seemed like a bit of a plotter. Forsberg was coming back. I didn't want to take a risk. Now, for the first time in 10 years, Ricky decides to play a lock forward for 65 minutes, and that was with a HIA, and the guy had basically had a base of what? So, priced at 100K or K less than Firmer, it just makes sense for me to get the guy in that's in playing in the middle, not on the edge, getting base, and 150K allows me to lock up another position in the front row. So it's a matter of fixing two positions as opposed to holding them both in a blind spot for one. It just made sense as a whole. That's the only reason.
Yep. No, that's fair enough. And again, team makeup is going to be, you know, a lot, a big part of these sort of trades and stuff. I was just curious with the Firmall trade, and you, I knew that you had him in your side. So, but if you don't have Smithies and you've got other things to fix, and I guess that makes a bit more sense. Brendan Picura, though, I don't think it makes any sense to get rid of him. I think people are looking at the 4 points going, I don't want that in his rolling break even. He's only 426,000. And I think that a lot of teams are going to want him back. And I really think what you don't want to be doing is wasting a second trade to get someone back in when, you know, you can just save it and just have them in your side. He's completely healthy. The 4 points, people need to remember, the round one score is the least relevant of the season because it drops out after one price change. After one price change, it's going to drop out. So even if he loses money after round three, because the round one 4 point score is going to drop out, he's automatically going to start making money again straight away. So it's one of those things where there's not really any reason to get rid of him. He had a bad score last round. You can't get rid of that by trading him out. You've already copped the four, and he's healthy, and he's still the same player that you wanted to start with, and you should have, because at his price point, his talent level, he could even be a 60-plus average. It's one of the strange ones for me. I don't understand, aside from maybe people thinking that they can avoid cash drops, but that's only going to be for a week and he's going to make that money back. So to me, Picura is a definite hold in my team.
Oh, I think everyone that's played for a while is keeping him. I would like to think that a lot of the trade-outs are a lot of the newer people that haven't really kind of seen him play before. I got him in on the premise that he's not really a cashier, he's just someone that wanted to keep for the season. If you have a look at him play, the guy's an absolute beast. There's a lot of work. He's in probably one of the top three teams in the competition. He's going to play a lot of early rounds on dry track in Brisbane with Queensland weather. If you actually saw his trials, man, the guy is an absolute animal. Like he's going to go very close to that line a number of times. I think he was held up a couple of times in the trials. He's just going to take that one game as an anomaly. Think of it this way. I was going to use Tom Dvorovich, then, which is probably a bit of an extreme example, but let's say Payne Haas. If Payne Haas scored four this week, do you think he'd be going, oh my God, I need to trade him? It's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's for different reasons. Like Payne Haas is a proven gun, but this is also a guy that's at a price point that you know is going to make you money. So you know you're going to lose money by not having him in your side. He will make money. And all the numbers that we went through with Wilfred in the preseason, he could be 20 points undervalued really easily. And you can't find those type of options too often in Supercoach. So it does happen in previous seasons where these type of guys like a Brendan Picura end up being a keeper all season. And you start with these guys as a cashy, either as a cow or a mid-ranger, and all of a sudden they get the opportunity, they hit their potential, and they're averaging 65 points a game, and you go, well, I don't need to trade them out. Preston was very close to that last year for the Bulldogs. Yeah. That could be Picura this year. So I think the teams are going to be wasting trades to get him back in if they get rid of him. I'm really against it. Jason Taumalolo, though, I'm not against, but I tell you what, I was really against him in the preseason. And look, I'm so glad. And look, I'm not going to gloat about it because I only got to play like 21 minutes. But one of the key factors for me that I mentioned in reviewing Jason Taumalolo as an option is that his coach is Todd Payton. And he has not played him well the whole time that Todd Payton has been there. And I've never believed in Todd Payton. And Todd Payton decided to rest him and only play him 21 minutes. And then he came off and he didn't go back on. So, I mean, Taumalolo is one where I don't think that you need to see anything else. I think that you could see that, you know, he only scored 16 points in 22 minutes. He ran a lot of decoys. He didn't actually do a lot of work. I think he only had three runs. And Todd Payton's talking about resting him when he can. I think that that's enough to say you don't need to see another week out of Jason Taumalolo. You probably need to get rid of him. But I would probably say to teams, Billy, if you've got other things that you need to fix, I wouldn't necessarily think that he's a must trade because it's unlikely that the Cows are going to be up by a heap against Newcastle and he's going to get rested again. So it's just as likely he plays 45 minutes this week and scores a solid score. So whilst I'm up for trading him, if teams have got a lot of fires to put out, I wouldn't necessarily think that it's that bad to hold him a week and get rid of him next week if you need to.
Yeah, agree with that. His minutes have gone down consistently the last couple of years, and his PPM as well. He just doesn't seem to be as dangerous anymore. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's age, who knows. I actually feel for the guy, mate. If what you're saying is true and the coach is just resting him because he wants to keep him in Cotton Wool because he doesn't want to hurt his most damaging player, I don't feel for the bloke. Like, as a player, as a forward, you want to sort of get on the field and kind of rip in and then sort of come off and have a spell. But as a sportsman, I don't ever remember playing a game where I wanted the coach to rest me, just save me for the big games. You want to be out there. I feel sorry for the bloke sitting on the sideline going, I wish I was out there.
Well, it's really silly from the Cowboys as well, because it's not like they're the Penrith Panthers. Like,
yeah,
they can't afford to be doing this and thinking about, well, you know, what about when we get to the finals? You didn't make the finals last year. You know, it's just... And the other thing that really irks me about it is beyond Todd Payton, because the Cowboys have been saying this since they signed him into a 10-year, $10 million deal. And at this point, the Cowboys are basically saying, oh, let's wait until the last year of his 10-year deal before we really use him and really, you know, it's just bloody hell, just run him into the ground. Like, it seems like the Cowboys don't actually know if they want him past his current contract anyway. There was all the talk about him maybe going to the Dragons. They got McLean, that's the starting front rower. He's not really much chop. But just play him and get some consistency in him. Because I think one thing, Billy, I think that we saw last year is that because he had injury-affected games plus the minute-affected games, his season was real stop-start. Like, he was out like four or five different times for a game or two. And I think because of that, like, I don't think he got the consistency in his performance that he wanted. And that happens as well if you don't play guys enough.
Yeah, you know, match fitness is a big thing. Confidence is a big thing, particularly when you're coming back from injury. I mean, how hard are you going to run knowing you're coming back from a certain type of injury and then trying to get up some match fitness? And if you play three or four games and go off again, you're going to do the same thing. You're going to build up again. You're not going to go like a half bat out of hell. Question I had for you is, how many years into this contract is he? Is he over halfway yet?
Yeah, so he's up in 2027. So he's got this season and two more after it. So he's, you know, gone through 7 years of that 10-year deal, which is what I mean, like, when I talk about, you know, at what point were they going to, you know, use him for the minutes and stuff. Like, I just don't know what they're doing. But anyway, for a Supercoach option,
that's a lot.
He needs to go. I think we saw enough, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he plays 45, 50 minutes this week, potentially even. So you may as well hold him if you've got other stuff to do in the meantime. Ezra Mann makes complete sense. Scored 21 points. I don't think he was a good option before the season started. So it makes sense that teams are going to cut their losses, especially with some of the 5-8s that have started to come up. Tupanua, number 8, most popular trade. I've got him at the moment. I'm actually quite... He's one of the guys that I think I might need to trade next week, which is why I was getting lay-butt this week. And so he's actually one of the guys that I'm watching this week. And this is one of those things, Billy, that I was saying with our little strategy chat before Market Watch, where you got a free look again to actually see what the Roosters rotation looks like. We didn't get to see that in Vegas. So personally, as a Tupanua owner, like, I'm probably going to end up trading him next week. But I want to see what the rotation is, because we didn't get to see it properly in Vegas because we had both edge back rowers get injured and it was just injuries everywhere for that rotation. So I'd just rather see exactly what's going to happen with the rotation before I move on it next week. Because if he turns around and gets 80 minutes this week, well, then I'd rather have Tupanui in my side. And the matchup against Manly isn't the worst either. So I understand people trading him. Are you getting rid of Tupanui yourself?
I never owned him, mate. I was too scared of that Cook's rotation in the back row and the front row that I didn't even look at any of the players at all. Hence my dilemma with May.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm going to watch him this week. I get people getting rid of him, but he's pretty cheap at 398. So if you can have a free look at him, it might be good. Josh Adokar makes sense. He's injured and Nick Kotrick is dropped. So traded out, like, pretty straightforward for the most part. A lot of footy talk in these episodes, so we do need to take the quick breaks. And this time it's to talk about oneworldcourier.com.au. You can go to oneworldcourier.com today. If you own a business or you just work for a business that has a lot of shipping needs or even a small amount of shipping or courier needs, then One World Courier are your people to talk to. They are an Australian-owned company. They provide fantastic service. And what they are is an actual platform that compares the market for all your shipping costs and everything. So if you want to have a look at shipping overseas or domestically, no matter how big or small for your business, they've got you covered. You can check out what the best rates are or what the best service is and pick that one and they'll organize it for you, and they'll also watch it from point A to point B as well to make sure that you get the best service and whatever you're shipping gets there unscathed and quickly. So oneworldcourier.com.au, if you jump on and sign up today, you've got a spot there that you can say how you heard about One World Courier and just pop all stars in the cell there where you can write. And that way they'll see that you come from the podcast and they'll actually give you a great rate to start off with as well, so you can save straight away with them. So oneworldcourier.com.au, go jump on there today for all your shipping or courier needs. The traded in, there's a lot of straightforward ones too. So Terrell May, most traded in player, and I'm trading him in this week as well. He should be the most traded in player because Spencer Leanu gone and the team that the Roosters have named as well, it really just opens up the minutes for him. And that was one of the things in the preseason I didn't like. And I'm not going to go back on what I said because we haven't been able to see what the Roosters' rotation would have been. Spencer Leanu, you know, is gone. Jared's back now. They both swap each other out. I'm getting on Terrell May, even though I wasn't on him in the preseason, because with Spencer Leanu out, they now only have three legitimate front row forward options instead of four. And that's going to make a really big difference to Terrell May. So I'm trading Spencer Leanu straight to May and upgrading him. And I think that May is about as close as a must-have for this week as what you can have. He threw up the 64 points in extended minutes, 54 minutes in round one. Injury-affected minutes for sure. But now with Spencer Leanu out, I know Jared comes back, but Jared also might be easing back in because his first couple of games of the season, which normally does happen with his minutes. I just can't see May now with Spencer out not playing good minutes. So I think that most people should be looking at getting May in, and unless they've got like a super strong front row forward rotation, they decided to stack front row forward Billy to start the season.
Oh, there would have been a couple that did that. Would it be funny if the old school train of thought ended up the top 100 teams 6 weeks in down the track with front row forwards and second row forwards? But question I have for you around the rotation. So what generally happens with the Chooks? Does JWH play 20 minutes or 25 then come off? I'm just trying to figure out when May would actually go on. I'm assuming it's around the probably 20.
Around the, yeah, it's sort of 18 to 20 minute mark normally. Jared doesn't normally stay on until the 25th minute. It's normally earlier than that. If I were to guess, I would say about the 20th minute, which bodes really well. Because Lindsay is the one that's going to get the extended minutes.
So he comes on at the around 18, 20-minute mark, plays 20 minutes, and then probably plays a good sort of a good chunk of 20 at least. JWH comes back on, or he even just stays on, and JWH rotates around the middle. So he can basically bank on 40, maybe an extra 10 at the end, maybe.
Yeah, I've got him pegged for about 45 minutes, and that projects really well for him. Like, he should be 55-plus. As a sort of floor, I think. So that presents really good value as a floor.
Well, he has that super friendly game as well. So even though it's only 45 minutes, you've got those tackle busts and offloads, which give him that extra 10 points.
Yeah, he had the three offloads in Vegas. And the longer he stays out of the field, the more chance he's going to be to get those away as well. So his base attack's always been really good with the tackle breaks, offloads, and he's got a good work rate too. So the only thing May ever needed, despite people talking about my hate for him in the preseason, I did not like him as an option. It is very true. But I do like him as a player. The only thing that he needed was the minutes and security with his job. And I think that he's found that 100% now for the next 8 weeks. So very interesting as well to me that they've got the bench that they've picked. It looked like that Nat Butcher was going to be used on an edge and then also maybe at lock. Which was going to help him help out. So we need to see what edge he's actually going to go to this time around. But yeah, it's May's a no-brainer at this point with Leanu out. So I think that that's a great trade. Labut, you wanted to talk about, Billy. 465,000. I looked at him in the preseason, mate, and the thing that kept me away was the price point. If he was 400K, I might have gone there, but it was just getting close to 500K. I went, I can't get myself there at that price. But I have to say, like, that is... it's easily the best game I've seen Labut play. And people might say, oh, the Dolphins are really bad. To me, there was more to it. Like, he scored 103 points because the Dolphins were bad and he got, you know, a try and a try assist and a couple of line breaks and stuff. But it wasn't just that the Dolphins were bad. He was very, very good. And how he scored those tries, like the first try was a... I'm trying to describe it to you because you didn't get to see it. I don't know, a lot of the listeners probably did. it was a massive solo effort. You know, he was running at a back line where he had support on his left, support on his right, and he's used both sides, and he's done a flick pass one-handed dummy on the fullback being the hammer, who fell for it hook, line, and sinker, and then just stepped inside him and went past and beat everybody else for speed. It was like a 40-meter, 30-meter effort just on him. It was really good. But one of the best things that I liked about him, I'm not just buying him for the tries, you know, because obviously they're going to come and go, but I thought that his work was really good. So what he was actually doing quite a bit, he was going in and taking hit-ups. He had 14 runs for the game and 3 tackle breaks, but he went in for some pretty strong hit-ups. There was half a dozen of those where he's just gone in for a really good hit-up. And I love to see that, especially from a young guy that's not really established in first grade. He just seemed really strong, really hungry, and his skill level was really good. And obviously 103 is a great score, but I think that he's shown that even if he's not going to get the attacking stats, that he can be in the 40s as a centre wing, and he's going to make good money as well. So I'm all over him. If I'm not getting him this week, he's going to be a must for me next week because I'm super comfortable playing him. And the Knights this week are a good matchup at home. The following week, they're going to play St. George. And despite how good St. George, you know, went against the Titans, I think that's a great matchup. Then the Broncos and the Titans, and that Titans one, man, I want Cowboys for that matchup. So, yeah, love Labor.
Makes you wonder how you're going to get Holmes in as well. the other thing I looked at was his, I had a quick look at his base, and yeah, a good sort of 20 tackles a game as well under that. So it just seemed like his base would be around the 40 mark. Given the draw, you'd be more than happy with that and him falling over the line every two games to bring it up to a 55-60 type average. So, can certainly see him rising. I'll leave it this week because I've got bigger fish to fry with fixing the forward pack. But, if you can get him in this week, I'd 100% be, doing it. He's one of those players that's probably not much point even watching anymore. So agree with you.
Yeah, I think that the thing that he's got on some of these other guys is that he's not just going to make money, but he's going to be very playable. And especially because there's a lot of teams that have a real dirt centre wing. Like, he might even be a lot of teams' second best centre wing option if they've gone real dirty in the centre wing. And that's super valuable to get a guy that you know is going to make money, but that has good matchups and you can play. Yeah, that's a double whammy. So I'm going to say that if it wasn't for his price, I'd say he's a must-have in the next fortnight. You know, I don't think he's quite there because of the price point and because it is only one game sample size. So we have to remember, you know, he could have just had a boom game. But, man, he looked so good to me, passed the eye test massively. Bentra Vojvic, third most popular trade-in. Oh, I think that makes sense. We've got Schuster in New South Wales Cup at the moment. Murmurs that it's Burbo's job to lose now, so makes total sense. Vitala Mariner does not make sense, and I think that a lot of teams are just going to reverse him out. I was actually really surprised, Billy, that how popular he's been spoken about. Like, the only reason he ended up starting last week, and he scored 86, so well done to him, but they carved up the Titans, who looked pretty poor. He started because Laurie was out pre-game. Laurie got ruled out, and that pushed Jack DeBellin to front row and meant that Vitala Mariner starts. Obviously, Laurie's back this week, and not only that, but we've got Luciano back, who's going to take an edge role eventually. He's back on the bench, and he's not going to be starting unless there's an injury. So all of a sudden, you know, 86 points looks great, but remember what we said before, right, Billy? That's going to drop out very quickly, and you're going to be left with 30s and 40s for a guy that's 363,000. Like, you can't jump on a bench forward that's going to be staying on the bench at the moment for 363,000. I just don't really get it this week, especially.
No, they really have to be around that sort of 200 and 250 mark and a decent PPM, because you've got to remember they're going to be getting 30 minutes off the bench at the most, so expect 40s at the most. Yeah, the other thing is the Luciano piece. Like, you really can't go into the pick-in players from any team that you have players of that caliber that are going to come back into the mix, particularly when you don't know what the rotations are going to be, or if you do know what the rotations have been historically, minute-wise. Knowing that there's another starter going to come in and just cut that piece to shreds.
Yeah, and even if you disagree with us, everyone, like, if you're sitting there going, nah, I disagree with you guys on it, that's fine. Why don't you just wait a week, though, to be on the safe side? You know, he's on the bench this week. See what happens this week. Because, look, maybe you're right and we're wrong, and maybe he plays 50 minutes this week and he scores great. Okay, get him next week. But maybe he scores 35 points this week. And you're, oh, I'm glad I didn't get him this week. You know, you're not going to start him off the bench anyway, everyone, but you are going to want to make money out of him, and that's not going to be after this round anyway. So if you're really that keen on RFM, wait a week and see what the rotation is, because you do have that luxury this early in the season. Josh Kerr, slightly surprised, 350,000. He's a dual front row forward, second row forward. So I think a lot of teams are searching in that sort of 300 to 450 bracket on what they can get in for an Arrow or a Spencer Leanu. And Josh Kerr comes up because he's 350K and because he scored 76 points on the weekend. Now, I was chatting to someone about this today, Billy. I've got no interest in Josh Kerr at all. He scored 76 with a line break try. And last year, he scored zero tries. So now that you've got one, you can probably guess the likelihood that you're going to hit another one from him. And on top of that, his minutes on the weekend were probably inflated a little bit. He ended up playing 40 minutes. And it's one of those ones where Lemuelu got hurt, so they had one less forward in the rotation. They do carry a utility back on the bench as well, so they were very short on the bench with only two forwards to do the substitutions. He probably got 5-10 more minutes even than what he's supposed to. But if you have a look at his career, there was only one year, which was in 2021, that he actually played significant minutes. He never has. So the last 2 years, he's got 34 and 31 points per game in 29 and 35 minutes, and that's been his role for most of his career, aside from 2021. So I just think that he's a massive stay away at the moment because, yes, his break-even looks nice. Yes, the 76 looks nice, but if he doesn't score a try and he doesn't get a few extra minutes, then you know he's going to be going along in the 30s, and that's not going to be any good.
Yeah, mate, I don't have anything to add to that comment. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. Guys with small minutes, no-go zone. Completely ignore the clutch attack. Not going to happen again.
Yeah, and I'll completely change my tune if he's starting, but I just don't see him, you know, getting flicked to be a starter yet. If that happens, obviously that changes because his minutes change, but we need to see it. Tommy Flegler, did you end up starting Flegler? I know we talked about it a little bit.
No, I opted to sacrifice because I kind of figured he'd be around the 45 average mark. I opted for Cotter instead as my starting front row forward, and I took a punt in the I keep forgetting his name, the big 1.6 ppm dogs bench forward.
Sam Hughes.
I can't remember. Yeah, Hughes. Phillips Hughes, HP. I picked him thinking, look, all I need is 35 minutes from him off the bench. I'll get, you know, 45, 50. I'll be happy with that. Wasn't expecting a 31. So, I opted to use that Flegler money elsewhere to really sort of get a decent spine. Getting a line break try wasn't impressive for me because he got the 45 I was expecting. Just wasn't expecting an extra 30 points for my trouble. So, frustrated there, but congratulations to the people that got him. It's a good start.
It is a good start, and I was 50-50 on having him in my side. At 475K, I know I say this about a few players, but I just wished he was cheaper because, you know, you could, even like 30-40K, you could kind of get around it a bit more. But I thought that he looked quite good. He played 53 minutes. Now, again, the question this week is going to be, is that his minutes? Because it could be, and if it is, that's fantastic. Or were they inflated a little bit? And is it really like 45 minutes? You know, it's going to be minutes watch on him for this week. One of the encouraging things that I did see, though, from him is that his base was really good. And he seemed to rip in with the work. So he had a 49 raw base. Last year, his average raw base was 37, obviously in less minutes. But his PPM was through the roof on the weekend, 1.43 PPM. Now, obviously, that's a try. But if you took the try and everything out of it, it's still around a 1.2 PPM, and all of his years in his career, the 4 years before, are all between 1.02 and 1.06. So if he's going to increase his PPM by like 15% because, you know, he's gone to a new club, he's a leader in that pack now, he's got a different role, then he could be immense value because he is someone that's young enough to be able to do that and make a big impact. So I quite like Flegler as a buy, as an option for the front row forward. Again, I think you can watch him this week and see what the real minutes are going to be for him. But if he plays 50s minutes again, Billy, this week, he's a definite option.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't be too concerned about the minutes. Obviously, he's going to get them because he's the alpha prop. I was just kind of banking on, at that kind of price point, the same kind of PPM going to a team which wasn't as good as the Broncos, I kind of thought that might offset it somewhat, not thinking, hey, he's the big alpha dog now, he's got to step up. I would watch him again for another week, not so much for the minutes, just to see if his output and effort is the same. If the output and effort is the same around that 1.2 ppm, then it brings him right into contention. I think you can probably almost bank on 50 points a game. You're not going to buy an alpha prop from another club and start giving him 35, 40 minutes. He's only playing the big minutes.
Yeah, and it's like that's not a great score, but one of the things is when you look at front row forward, it is pretty hard to get a guy that can just give you 50 points. It's not going to cost you too much money. And he's going to be able to do that. You know, he might not be amazing all year. He might not score another try all season potentially, but he should be able to give you points in the 50s. And that's a lot more consistent than a lot of the other options that are sort of around the sub 500 price point. Moving quite along, we've got Morgan Smithies. And I know you're getting him in, Billy. I started with him because in the Raiders team preview, I didn't like him. Because to me, it was just a horse straight swap to him once horse came back round three. But then as the season kicked off, there was a lot more to like about him for me because other factors came into play. We had Whitehead ruled out for 4 or 5 weeks with an injury, and that's one that could also linger, so maybe it's even longer. We had the rumours starting that horse could come back as a front rower, and that helps. We had rumours that he could come back on an edge and that helps. We had Papa Lee potentially looked at as the best role for him being on the bench and he's currently starting. There was just that many things that went, you know what, if all these things are there to potentially happen, there's enough opportunity for Smithies to potentially still be starting. So I ended up starting with him. And I thought that he looked, like you said, really good. He played 58 minutes and that was also coming off injured. He actually had a knock. Which was, I think, pretty early on, maybe 30-odd minutes into the game, he had a knock, and it might have been a HIA from memory even, or maybe it was just a knock and he needed to see a trainer, but he came off. So he was looking like he was going to play big minutes. He ended up still playing the 69 minutes. He played with 58 points. So he might have been playing 80 minutes on the weekend, which is insane to think about, that he could have got 80 minutes, but this week, we might actually see Morgan Smithies play 80 minutes, which is huge at 345,000. It's a no-brainer for me. If you don't have him, I'd be getting him in. And he's another one of those ones, Billy, where you could play him this week very easily because his floor is probably going to be 50s.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to have much in attack. He just seems to be very, very busy. But although if you go back 10 years, nor did Sean Benson 2.0 on the horizon, maybe. They used to have an 80-minute lock. Let's hope there's another Nathan Harmar in the mix.
Yeah, well, he had 60 in raw base and two negative stats to give him his 58 points. So, I mean, 60 in raw base is phenomenal. Now, maybe his minutes aren't 69, but look, he can drop to 60 minutes and still do a 55 raw base very easily. So I'm all aboard it. I'm all around it. I think that he will actually maintain his job. But let's move along to some of the other ones that are a little bit more arguable. Jacob Gagai. Now, this is the one that is a prototypical wait and see for me. I'm an owner because I went, you know what, I'm going to take the plunge for round one in Vegas. I don't know if we're going to get any bottom dollar cheapies. I need one to make my team work. I'm starting with Gagai and I'm going to hope for the best. Very happy as an owner that he's named this week. If I did not own him, Billy, he's probably the top player where you need to wait until next week because you got Milne in the extended bench. There's rumblings that maybe one of these other guys are going to come in for Gagai, even a Milne. That might happen as early as this game. If it doesn't, you get to see TLT next week before there's a price change. I would 100% be waiting with Gagai until next week to see if he's actually named and plays for his first price change.
Oh, mate, 100%. This is probably going a bit too far, but I would actually get the Galvin over him if you need a cheapie this week, purely because he seems to have won the spot. He's a half, and you can bring the Raiders 5'8" during the 7.75 in that position. I'm not disagreeing with your comment at all, mate. If you started the season winning, it's purely because you need him in your team for the makeup of your team in order to get higher priced guys. You're not getting him in now to get higher priced guys. You're getting him in for the wrong reasons. So you're 100% late. I think every man his dog will be doing the same thing.
Yeah, he's not someone that you can play either. Like some of these other guys, like a Smithies and Labour and stuff, you can play those guys straight away. You're never going to play Gagai. You're only in it for the money. So wait and see next week that he's actually going to give you the money. Otherwise, if that's all you're in for and he doesn't give you a dollar, then you've got him for nothing.
Yep.
Kai Pierce-Paul, ninth most popular trade. I'm extremely torn on this one, Billy. I thought he looked phenomenal. He scored 43 points. He looked like a super player. And he played 40 minutes. Now, that's all great. The problem is that the Knights had Tuala go down, which saw Lucas move to centre, and then Lucas went down, which saw Pierce-Paul move out there. Basically, they had Lucas gone for the last, 15 minutes of the game, I think it was, and then they also had Tuala gone for 40 minutes of the game, the second half, basically. That's really stuffed up their rotations. Now, Pierce-Paul is named to start, Billy. 345,000, looked great last week. Dylan Lucas isn't in the team. Now, he's not in the team because of concussion. It seems like, you know, a large percentage of the time, 90-plus percent, that these guys like Lucas pass all the concussion protocols for the following week and they're good to go. I would be quite surprised if Dylan Lucas was preferred to start round one, he misses 1 week, that he would then be on the outer by the third game. I would think that he's odds on favourite to be starting again and Pierce-Paul is back on the bench. And that's not because I think Pierce-Paul isn't a great player and could start. He definitely could. But it's not what they preferred round one. So I don't know why Lucas coming back, he doesn't go straight into that edge role, because I thought Lucas looked really good round one as well. So to me, it is a little trappish, because if Pierce-Paul has a blinder this week, it's great. But then if he's back on the bench next week and he only plays 20 minutes, then that's a big issue, because he's actually going to lose the money that he's about to make the following week. I'm just going to wait and see. I very much want Pierce-Paul next week. Tupanua to Pierce-Paul next week might be the trade that I'll make, but at least I'll get to see how Lucas and Pierce-Paul fit in together next week, because if Pierce-Paul is on the bench next week, then that's going to be pretty problematic, because we already saw that Lucas was looking at pretty reasonable minutes as a second rower.
Yeah, mate, even if Pierce-Paul goes and absolutely brains it this week, surely he goes straight back to the bench. Reason being, Lucas has spent a long time trying to get that edge spot, and towards the end of last year, he had a high work rate. Good tackle rate, doesn't miss many. He's obviously won the position. So if Pierce-Paul has an absolute blinder, surely he just goes back to the bench and comes off and plays the middle. So they get two dominant players back in that team as opposed to one. I can't see them wanting just to leave him out. It's not like they have a massive experience forward back on the bench. So surely he just goes back there. The only other thing to mention here is, mate, I must have completely missed his game. I watched that game because I captained Ponga straight out. So maybe I was less focused on the forwards because I kept showing the remote at the TV, mate. I was absolutely infuriated with that game. They were absolutely woeful.
Newcastle were terrible. I think it might be the worst I've seen them play since the Tinkler era.
So I'm sorry if I missed Pierce-Paul's effort, but I was absolutely disgraced in looking at Ponga for doing hit ups like, give it to Ponga! Give it to Ponga! Tackle Ponga!
Hey, I was right there with you, don't worry.
Yeah, I needed him to do something. Sorry, I was just right. Mate, Hastings and that forward pass. Like, what are you doing, idiot? Run the clock. poor blokes. They just had one of those games to forget. Like, sorry.
They cannot play worse than that. Like, they can't do any worse. But the other thing I'll bring up with Pierce-Paul as well is he had a very disrupted preseason with a foot injury, and he's over from the UK. He's going to be traveling to Townsville. It's going to be very hot for a lad that's just recently come from the UK, let alone a lad that hasn't had a preseason because he played like one trial and had a foot injury all the way up until that. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's not playing the full 80 minutes up in Townsville. I would not be surprised at all if he plays, you know, 55 minutes, and that's not going to be that great either. So it's an easy wait and see for me with Pierce-Paul. I really love him as a player, Billy, I have to say. Like, I thought that he looked good over in the UK. Wasn't sure how he'd translate here, but he was a real goer. Like, he had something about him. He had a bit of X factor, and he wasn't scared to go in there and bring a lot of energy and get in on the work and take the hits. So I think he could be a real player, but obviously, like everybody, you need minutes, and we might not see that until next week. So wait and see for me, but certainly a potential gun purchase. Taylan May. I was up and down on May. He was in and out of my side all preseason. Ended up getting him in. Ended up actually swapping Lucas for him, so it was a masterstroke. But he scored 67 points in the first round of the season against the Storm. That included a couple of line breaks as well. And I was really impressed with his base attack and also he's running at the ball that got him his two line breaks in a game that they scored no tries in. He still managed 67 points. So I'm all aboard teams getting him in. Yeah, so his numbers were amazing against the Storm, particularly when you consider that. So I love him as a buy this week. He's got back-to-back games at home, Parramatta this week, and then the Broncos. He does have the round six buy, but you're going to get 4 weeks out of him. So now's probably the best time to buy someone like May because he's going to potentially be a keeper, but you want to get him far and away enough from that buy to get enough value before he has a week off. So he shapes as a perfect purchase. I'll tell you, Billy, he had 35 points in raw base, which is really good. But then he had all the base attack as well and a couple of line breaks. So he looks like a real goer at 458K.
Yeah, plus that missed try we were just talking about earlier. So you add that into the mix and the fact that it was a low-scoring affair versus the Storm. The only side is up. Originally, I didn't have him the same as you, but then he's priced like whatever. He's priced well enough that everyone's going to have him in their team. I just kind of figured, you know what, he's better on the wing with all his kick returns, but best team in the comp. He moves into centre, going to get a lot more tackles, a lot more opportunity with the ball, which is what he actually didn't have on the wing because he sat inside Crichton. And the fact that Crichton's not there anymore and he moved into that position, so he gets a lot of the ball before the Chinese wall. it was too good of an opportunity. And the fact that they put him on the left, not the right, which is the way they go, that was just a solidifier.
It might be time to move on to TLT, mate. Before we do get into it, we need to talk about the fantastic betting partner in Picklebet. Picklebet.com.au, go jump on there today. Love some of the markets for this week, though. I've got to say, some of the first try scorer markets. Last week, I was big on Greg Marju. Didn't get there, but I reckon I'm going to double down this week because he is $9.50 for first try this week on Picklebet. That's sensational. You can also get Alex Johnston if you want to get a bet in for the first game of the round. For him, first try, $11. $11 on AJ is a blessing. You will not find that many other places. Sportsbet are a couple bucks worse than that. On Greg Marju, they're $1.50 worse as well. So Picklebet often has some really good odds that you can find, certainly on all the sports betting. But if you like racing, they're great at racing, fantastic at e-gaming, but great at other sports too. You can jump on the basketball. NBL's on tonight with the final series going. Jump on there as well. But make sure when you create the account on Picklebet that you let them know that you come from this podcast. And to do that, when you sign up, make sure that you put All Stars as your affiliate code. Just say All Stars in that box, and they'll know that you come from this podcast. They'll take great care of you. They often have some great offers and stuff that you'll find in there as well. So jump on, have a look if you like a punt. Obviously, always gamble responsibly, though. Think, is this a bet that you really want to place? For gambling help, you can call 1-800-858-858. For further help, you can go to gamblinghelponline.org.au. Now back to the footy talk. Machine Gun TLT, where we have a look at any other options that are worthy of talking about outside of Market Watch, plus any captaincy and vice-captaincy options that might be there. And the first game that we're going to look at is the Broncos and South Sydney that kicks off the round. So we're already talking a bit about the Broncos, with Souths. I think the interesting ones that haven't been spoken about because they weren't in the top 10 most traded, Talis Duncan starting in jersey 12. It's the first game of the season for him, so I wouldn't be rushing to buy him. I think it's a perfect time to see whether he's going to get 80 minutes or how that's going to work, because people need to remember, Billy, in Vegas, Cam Murray moved to the edge, and that's one of the reasons Arrow got less minutes. So, I mean, if Cam Murray moves to the edge 20 minutes in and Talis Duncan comes off, because he's probably not going to play in the middle, that's going to be an issue for Talis at his price in mid-300s. So, great week to watch. He could be a really good buy in a couple of weeks, Talis Duncan. The other ones too, you know, I'm sort of hesitant to say, you know, buy them, but I'm an owner of Tevita Totola, underwhelming with 37 points and lower minutes in Vegas. But I'm really buoyed by the fact that Arrow's out. I think that these front rowers in Kepi and Totola could actually benefit quite a bit from Arrow not moving to the middle. So I'm really keen to hold and watch these guys. I know that somebody said to me today, you know, I've got to get rid of Leenu and I don't have any spare cash and I just want to get, you know, a bit of a plotter. I don't want to spend. And my answer to them at sub 400K was, well, Sean Kepi at 385, he's probably going to benefit from Arrow going. And really, there isn't anyone else in those sort of price points to go from a Leenu at 330 to anyone meaningful. So you know, maybe these South front rowers are going to benefit from Arrow not moving to the edge from the edge to the middle now.
Well, Kepi's the same sort of plotter, so that's basically going to be like for like there. the upside was with the other bloke. I had him in my team early, but I just kept looking at him and thinking, you know what? I can't see him getting more than 55 points. He's probably more of a 45 to 55. Around the bottom of that mark last week kind of justified it, but I think there's the opportunity for an extra 5-10 points. It was the first game of the season as well, so keep in mind that it was, you know, first game back, needed a bit of time to sort of rock into it. So I would expect an extra 5 points in organic output just from the fact that they're going to get fitter. But if he's going to get even just an extra 5 points off that, you're probably lifted by 10 points.
Yeah, and it's the annoying thing is that they've persisted with this four forward bench of like Havili, who played good minutes as a middle forward in Vegas, Moali, Shaquai Mitchell comes onto the bench, and Thomas Burgess. You know, it's not a great bench for those middle forwards. But like we said, like it could mean that Talis Duncan comes off and maybe he only plays half a game. That wouldn't surprise me one bit, because Arrow was apparently slated to not even play half a game on an edge.
I'd love to see Havili come in and spell Cook just for 10 minutes, because he's played that role before. He's very, very quick. He's very good from that mark. Cook just doesn't seem to inject himself as much as he did 5 or 6 years ago. I know he's a bit older, and Wayne Bennett prided in moving on, had him shuffling the ball a bit around a bit more rather than letting him play his natural run game. But I just think Havili coming on and spending 10 minutes, allowing Cook to come back in fresh around the 65, maybe sort of 68-minute mark, would just add so much more to his game.
It might, at his age, it might be better to preserve him. But I will say, in Vegas, he was running a lot better than what I thought he has in the last couple of years. So maybe he's going to have, you know, a bit of a resurgence. But yeah, in Vegas too, Havili was actually really important for them in the middle, because he was making meters like he was like a 6'5". You know, 120 kilo front row that no one could stop. He was just making all these meters as this little middle forward that used to be a hooker. So I think he's really important in that role for them too. But there's some big guns in this one, Billy. You got Latrell Mitchell versus Reece Walsh. It is the first game of the round. They look like really good vice captaincy options on either of those if you have them.
Yeah, Latrell's the obvious choice in that game. You're just running that usual Thursday night gauntlet. Generally not ideal for a VC that early. I don't know why it is. Maybe it's smaller turnaround or Thursday night. If the crowds aren't as big and the players don't get the feel of the atmosphere. I've got no idea what it is, but there's a serious issue with a big school on a Thursday night.
Yeah, there seems to be some sort of voodoo curse on Thursday night games. I don't know what it is either, but he did score 96 against the Broncos last year, Latrell Mitchell, and he also has a high of 138, which is in his top half a dozen highest scores, best high scores against teams. So I would put it on him. But if you're not an owner of Latrell, I did think that Walsh injected himself really good in Vegas, and he did some really nice attacking plays. And he's someone who, if you look at last year, you don't really know. You know, he scored 111 against South when they weren't going too well. But earlier in the season, he scored 23 points against him in 80 minutes and was one of his worst scores of the season. I think that, for me, Latrell is a great vice-captaincy option. I'd be slightly more hesitant on a Walsh. But on Picklebet, if you like to have a bet, the Broncos are $1.33. I think that is really short. Like, I'm not sure who I'm going to pick in this one, Billy, but South are at $3.20. And if Latrell fires, I could see Latrell pushing him home against Brisbane. And even though it's playing up at Suncorp, I think that he really likes that Latrell. So if he's in for a big game, that could go a long way to getting a big upset at $3.20.
Not sure if I'd call it overs, but it's a hell of a decent price for a top team, given this early in the competition. You look around, I think we'll never catch up with a mate yesterday afternoon, and I reckon half his tipping were 1 for 8 or 2 for 8. So hell of a start to the season. So, mate, upsets galore. I wouldn't be putting a 1-12 past the mile around $5.
Well, the next game is the Sharks and the Bulldogs. And the Sharks line, -8.5 points, is $1.96 against the Dogs. And it's been played at Shark Park. So, I mean, we're talking about value of... I like that one quite a bit. Points bet stadium.
That's silly. That's silly. They should be around $1.70.
So, for the Sharkies, we've got the same players that were named last week. So no big changes. Hemingway hasn't been named. He'll probably come out next week. For the Dogs, now we do have changes, because obviously the Fox is gone. And what ended up happening was Connor Tracy came in. So it's not really gonna have a big impact on Supercoach unless potentially Karaz moves to the wing and Tracy to the centres. And I think there's a decent chance that happens. And you were saying in the preseason you much prefer Karaz on the wing, so maybe that's gonna happen now.
I actually enjoy watching him at centre too. Like he scored almost just as well. But I do like the kick returns and the tackle bust he gets from that wing. So I'd prefer to see him out there, although at that price, obviously wouldn't be buying him. I think he's one of those guys that you need to wait and see peak for sort of play for 5 or 6 weeks.
Well, mate, you mentioned, you know, it's a little bit early on a Thursday to put the VC. Why would you do that on Latrell? I would do it because I want to put the C on Nicho Hynes in the second game of the round, playing the Dogs. Last season, Nicho Hynes played the Dogs twice. He put on 97 points the first game and 129 points in the second game. Pretty good. Averages 85 against them. High score of 129. It's a no-brainer for me to throw the C on Nicho. And I think I'm actually feeling even better about it after his 16-point outing last week. They got it upgraded significantly to 32. His low point outing in round one, I think, means that he's going to have a lot of people lay off him, and especially because he's early in the round, you might see people vice-captaining him. And we could very well see, you know, a 105-point effort that's a really good game from him that's not going to be hugely loopable for some people. And that's going to be great, because if you can get a ton at this time of year, even if it's a small one, it's pretty big. And as we saw in round one, the best score was 110 points or something. So I'm all aboard the captaincy at Shark Park versus the Bulldogs. Oh, I expect a big Hynes bounce back this week.
Mate, I'm VCing him for that reason. Not going on the straight out fee, because there's some ordinary mob player in Turbo at Manly that I'm keen on.
Oh, no. We will get to this. We're not going to go there yet, but we will get to this. I don't think there's too many other real ones that are big to talk about, and either the Sharks or the Dogs. So let's move along. The Panthers and the Eels is the next one. So you want to have a bit of a Roosters crack, you know. Let's talk about your boys coming up against Penrith at Penrith after they've lost and not scored any points in 2024 yet. You know, this is a real bounce back game for the Penrith Panthers. I wouldn't want to play them after last week. So maybe teams are looking at this going, I'm going to captain Nathan Cleary. And look, I think that he is definitely an option. But first of all, I will say one of the good things is that Scott Sorensen's back, which helps Penrith too. But they did have Liam Henry remain on the bench, and he scored 36 points in limited minutes on the weekend and looked like probably the best cheap front row forward option, better than the two Bulldogs that a lot of us ended up with. So that was quite interesting. Teams could very much downgrade Spencer Leanu to Liam Henry and do worse than that at the moment, but with how he's going. Playing against the Eels, Nathan Cleary hasn't scored any points for this season yet, and I reckon he's going to be coming in. I'm very worried about this game as a non-Cleary owner, as someone that owns Mitchell Moses. Last year against the Eels, he threw up a 77 to start with, but then he finished off the season with a 109. They do talk about the Eels being a bit of a bogey team for Penrith, Billy, but generally, even though that's the case, the teams tend to score pretty well. They normally put on some points. I will say with Cleary, though, he's equal worst average against anyone is the Eels. Both the Eels and the Bulldogs, Cleary only averages 59 points for his career, and that is the bottom of the pile against all teams in the NRL.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but on the flip side of that, those two scores that you just mentioned last year, what, 89 or 39 and 100 whatever, something or other, they were versus the Eels last year when the Eels beat them twice, correct?
I think the Eels won one of them. I can't remember. They definitely won one. I can't remember if they won both or not.
I thought it was true. No, so much. How good a supporter am I?
Well, let's just say that there too, and you keep going on spinning me on why you're happy for Cleary captaincy. Are you going to look at Cleary captaincy?
I don't own him, mate. I was on the on the Moses train. It just made a lot more sense for me. It basically allowed me to fix the hooker problem. So in the, Grant and Moses just looked a lot better than Cleary and a real cheap hooker. Just kind of balanced it out. I was kind of thinking, you know what? Moses can last 6 weeks, then I'll upgrade and Cleary then.
Well, I mean, it's teams are going to have to pick between Hines and Cleary if they own them both, because obviously you can't vice captain and captain the other because they're both at halfback. So it's an interesting choice to have. I can see Cleary going pretty well though, and I'm pretty gutted I don't have him for this week. The Eels are paying $3.05 on Picklebet. I'm going to get on the 7.5 line at $1.90 because the Eels have got a very good record against Penrith, even playing at Penrith. So I think this is going to be a cracker of a game. Cleary is definitely an option with the numbers that we mentioned last year that he put up. The other guy that I'm quite keen on is Isaac Tungo. I mentioned him in the preseason. This could be a really good game for him as well. And obviously, I'm pretty happy to have May. I'm not big on your Eels backline, mate. I just think that Harper, we've seen his real defensive deficiencies he's had before. And really, Harper and Sean Russell, especially, like they're those guys on that side, that edge, they're going to get absolutely pummeled by Penrith.
Yeah, exactly. I think May is still dangerous, but yeah, you start looking at the other side as well. I've spent the last couple of days trying to figure out whether Cartwright is someone I want to get in my team. But even with a soft draw, you come back and look at the old school matchup like this and think, remember McCarty's an old Penrith boy as well. So you think there's a bit of danger of any time try score McCarty here?
I reckon that there's going to be huge value in that. He only played 68 minutes as well. So I'm really keen on seeing this Eels rotation. Like, Sean Lane got 80 minutes, and I want to see all this again from the Eels to see if they're going to do 2 weeks in a row the same sort of rotation. Because even like Madison only played like 35-odd minutes. It was quite strange with all the rotation. I also will mention that Moses, people are starting to trade out even already. I'm going to stick with him. There was a quote with him saying that it was super precautionary last week for him not to kick, and he's all right to go this week. Now, whether right to go means kicking or not, I guess it's open to interpretation, but he seemed to suggest that he's probably going to be kicking. So I'm going to ride Moses this week with you. But do you reckon that your Eels can get over the top of Penrith again with the record that you got?
Well, I think they can, but they'll have to play out of their skin. Like, we have to have a massive defensive effort. All the guys need to be switched on. Like, it's not like we go out there and absolutely demolish Panthers. They're such a good team. And we keep singling out Cleary. He just looks so dangerous, even in games where he doesn't have super coach-friendly games. And you completely forget that there's another guy called Lua over there, which can go 3 or 4 games where he's really quiet and all of a sudden just takes the pressure off Cleary and just has an absolute blinder with those little grubber balls behind the short ball. So, and that's on that side that you were talking about earlier. So that's what concerns me.
The next game of the round, the Raiders and the Tigers. This one's the first home game for Canberra at GIO Stadium. Canberra were good last week, grinding the Knights out and then getting a big win. One of the interesting things in this one for me, teams are looking at, you know, front row forwards, and some teams are actually saying, you know, maybe I'll go up to someone who I can rely on. I actually had Tappany in the preseason. I ended up getting rid of him for cheap ones, but I was wondering whether he'd get extra minutes. He played 56 minutes on the weekend, which is a lot more than what he normally starts the season with. Normally sort of around a 48-minute average. So Ricky did rely on him for an extra 8-odd minutes a game. Last year in the whole season, he only averaged 54 minutes a game, and the year before 51 minutes a game. So to play 56 minutes in the first game of the season, it bodes really well for him. And to play at home versus the Tigers pack, I think that he's still a decent enough option if you want to get a gun in. But on the other side of the fence, we haven't seen the Tigers play yet. We don't know what's going to happen, but they do have Solomona Fatapi, who's been named at centre. He's a bottom dollar cheapie that we didn't know was coming. He's definitely on the watch list. I would not be getting him in yet. But a lot of people, Billy, are jumping on Lachlan Galvin. So Galvin I ended up starting with because I didn't want to spend at the second 5'8 spot, and I've really got lucky with it. Aiden Caesar is on the bench. He apparently twinged his hamstring, but it's not all adding up to me. So either he's going to drop out of jersey 14 and not play, he's going to replace Galvin, and Galvin's going to go onto the bench, or maybe Caesar's going to play some hooker, and that's going to be the role, and it's going to be Galvin's number 6 jersey. It's very tough for teams to jump on a cheapie like Lachlan Galvin straight away without seeing 1 minute of game time. So I think that it is a lot safer to wait, but obviously some teams might need the money now, and that's why they're doing it.
I don't see the reasoning for putting Cesar on the bench if he's going to come in to 5'8". He's either named there and he starts, or he's named as what, 19, 20, 21 then comes in as a late change.
Yeah, I mean before the game he comes in. I don't mean during the game he comes in at six. So like, you know, before kickoff they say, oh, Galvin's back on the bench and Caesar's actually going to start.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I just can't see them naming him on the bench and then getting him to start before the switch with Galvin before the game.
Yep.
I just kind of figured if he was healthy enough, they would be naming him at six or completely out. And last minute, if he's healthy enough, then switch in. I can't see them naming him at 14. Then you know, oh, he's healthy now. We're just going to promote him and drop Galvin to bench. It just doesn't make sense. I reckon he's got a completely different role.
Yeah, well, that would be good because it didn't make sense to me either. I was trying to figure it out because, like, if he's got a hamstring twinge and that's why Gowan's starting, then you expect Caesar to be out of the side.
Exactly.
But he's sitting there in jersey 14. So it's a big watch and see. And it's one of the real big risks that you take by getting someone like Galvin in sight unseen. You know, you want to have a look and see. But I don't think there's any captaincy or vice captaincy options you can look at this one. So let's move along to the next one. And the Cowboys and the Knights. You talk about revenge games before with some players, Billy. People forget Caelan Ponga came from the Cowboys. He spurned them and signed with the Newcastle Knights. And this is always a bit of a revenge game for him. And he's going to be playing up there as well at Country Bank Stadium. So he had 50 points last week. And that was a very, very quiet 50 points. So, you know, I'm glass half full on Caelan Ponga. I thought that last week's match was awful from the Knights. I don't think it could have been worse. They went through attacking sets in the last 10 minutes where Caelan Ponga didn't touch a ball. And that can't possibly happen again. So if he can throw 50 up in a game like that, and the Knights are better this week, he should be able to throw up a decent score. But when you have a look at him, he in recent times hasn't played a lot of games against the Cowboys. His highest score against the Cowboys is 105. But he's got an average of 71, so he's been pretty solid against them. Last year, he only threw up a 58-point game. So we didn't quite get the revenge game last year, but it was with him at six. Do you see a bit of a bounce back against the Cowboys this week for Caelan Ponga?
Oh, 100%. Although I don't see a massive scoring game. I think he's just one of those. This is just one of those consistent kind of 35 to 100-type games. Particularly if he's playing at the fullback. I don't know if those averages you were talking about before include him maybe playing at 5-8. Maybe that kind of explains why it's a little bit lower because he has been all over the shop the last sort of 18 months, 2 years with him trialing in different spots. But, mate, I just got to go back to the fullback games, the last 10, 12 games of last year where he basically punched out 100 every single week with ease. So, wouldn't surprise me if he does that again this week, although it is a slightly better team, so I'd be banking on 85 plus this week.
Yeah, I think it'll be a bounce back. I'm not sure how much. I'll probably go for 75 plus. The last two games at fullback against the Cows, he played and got 55 points and 96 points. So in the middle, maybe a 75, and I'll probably go for that. I think that he could be a bit of a smoky captaincy option because a lot of teams are going to go for the Cleary and the Hines. So maybe if you VC those guys, I do actually think that he's going to be an option here. But there's a couple of high-priced guys in this game that haven't particularly fired, and the other one is Scott Drinkwater. I have seen teams already talking about, or maybe I'll get rid of him. It was disappointing last week, Billy, because Scott Drinkwater was in a team that absolutely flogged the Dolphins, scored 43 points, which is the most out of any team for the round. He only ended up with 48 points.
Yeah.
He just didn't have the try assists or the tries or the line breaks that we're used to seeing from him when the Cows put up points. I actually thought it was decent though. Like he had three offloads. You know, he ended up with 26 in raw base. 48 points considering what he did, I was actually slightly relieved. So I'm definitely not looking at selling him. And I've said to a couple of people, like playing at home versus Newcastle, the way Newcastle played last week, it's a great week for him. And then next week he's got the St. George Dragons, which is a great week. Broncos week four, and then he hits the Titans, and the Titans are going to be a great matchup where I might even consider captaining him. So I wouldn't be selling off on Scott Drinkwater after one game. 48 points when he didn't really do anything isn't bad. And like Caelan Ponga, I'm expecting a big bounce back in this game. I think both fullbacks are going to fire.
Oh, yeah, but he's an absolute gun. If you take the top two fullbacks out of the competition, he's in that run just below them. And it's not because he's any worse off than them. It's just that the other guys can score 150, 160 versus anyone. He just seems to be that flat track bully that just has those real big games and it's just that little rung below them. Yeah, mate. If you're going to score that, 50 points in a team that's absolutely smashing someone, it's just one of those games where from time to time you'll have two, three blokes, you know, as a support player after a line break, and they just throw it to the other bloke. It's just a game of luck. Sometimes you just miss them because everyone else is performing.
Yeah, he's actually gone pretty well in his last four games against Newcastle. He scored 105, 78, 70, and 80. So he's got an average in the 80s against Newcastle in his last four, across the last few years. So I'm expecting the same. I actually think he's going to go 80 plus, and that's kind of what he's been doing. I was also quite happy with some of the other Cowboys last week as well. I'm going to be starting them again. Lukey didn't get the full complement of minutes, but I thought he looked pretty good. Cotter's a bit of a concern, though, along with Taumalolo. He only played shorter minutes than what was expected as well. You're someone who owns Cotter. We haven't spoken about him because he's not being sold, but he played 52 minutes, which was only 2 minutes below what he was in 2023. I think a lot of people expected that he might have got bigger minutes. He only scored 46 points, which was all of his base and nothing else. Obviously, you're expecting more, Billy. You keep an eye on him this game?
Yeah, I'll watch him a bit closer. Like, I was only expecting around that minute mark, but I was just kind of hoping that if anyone was going to get a line break, he's more likely to do it, given these one of those agile sort of quick guys. But they basically dominated, like you said last week. There was no need for him to be on the field, so I'll take that as a bit of a mulligan and go and think, you know what, I'm basically getting what I'm paying for, so I'm not too concerned. At least it's around the 50 mark.
I tell you who I'd get instead of Cardi this week, potentially, for 100K less, or not 100K, maybe 75K less. Nanai last week scored a try. Only had 35 in real base, but had a couple line breaks and scored 86 points. How Newcastle defended last week, he could be in for another try and another sort of 70-plus outing again. And he's only 583,000, so he's sort of a... We spoke about it before round one. He's sort of a tier below those real expensive guys in the 600s, 700s in the second row spot. If you wanted to strike one for this week, he's got Newcastle and the Dragons the next two. He looked good against the Dolphins. He's my pick in this one. Anytime try, you can get a few bucks on him for that, and I reckon he's pretty good value. Let's move along and talk about the Storm and the Warriors. There's still no Munster. That's a big concern. Nelson is still not returning either. For the Warriors, it's the same side that we saw before. I think that the big one with the Storm, as far as guys that haven't been talked about, we spoke about, you know, front rowers that people are looking at. Kama Kamitha had a pretty solid game on the weekend for someone who doesn't cost a huge amount of money. He's 443,000. He played 51 minutes for 50 points. It was all raw base. I've always thought that he's been a guy that could bust out as a gun if he got the minutes. He's never gotten minutes in the 50s before. And he got 50 minutes on the nose, almost 51 minutes. So PPM of around one for his career. If he can keep that up, he's going to get you 50s as a $443,000 forward. So he is more expensive than like a Sean Kepi. He's only 20K more than a Totola when you're talking about those guys getting opportunity. Naz obviously isn't back yet, Billy, but Kama Kamitha, raw base, also has the tackle breaks and offloads in his game at times that he could add to that. He seems like someone that might be of value if Welsh's minutes are going to continue to slip, if Naz doesn't take the minutes away, and if he's going to be relied upon as a starting front rower still.
Yeah, I think there's too many concerns, though, with when Naz comes back and the fact that Welsh is an origin forward. I don't know why he's on the bench, and even if he is on the bench, I think he still gets a good sort of 45, 50 minutes. I just think with someone like a Sofa Solomona and his actual size, I just can't see him being on a bench for too long.
It's a shame that we can't see more games, because I'd like to have another couple games under the belt to be able to see whether Tui's going to keep the role or not. But yeah, there is a lot of risk with him. He is someone that we might see in a few weeks' time as still the starting prop, though, and ends up being decent enough value.
Yeah, but that's the best part about Supercoach too. There's speculation and hindsight. So if everyone got a chance to look at minutes and rotation and PPM for players for a good 4 to 5 weeks before they bought, we'd all have the same sides. The whole point of this podcast is to identify players like that. So if you think he's going to be value, then he's probably one of the better PPM options around that kind of price point. So back to your point, I'd probably, on pure ability and output, I'd have him over Kepi and Musgrave. It's just more around the question around, do you get him? It's just more around the is he going to maintain that spot? But if I had to pick on pure ability for a super coach for a 2 or 3 week run, I 100% get it.
Yeah, this is a tough one for starts as well, because I thought that the Warriors were grinding a little bit last week against the Sharks, and obviously the Storm really grinded for an 8-0 win.
Mm.
So I'm not too excited for this. Like Roger Tuivasa-Sheck put up 46 points. He might be looking at similar again this week. But with the Storm guys, like Ryan Pappenhausen, obviously didn't have one of his better games. But pretty much an afterthought with 30 points, 24 in base.
Yep.
It doesn't look like a great game to be starting guys that you don't need to in this one. But obviously, at the start of the season, you end up starting most of these options, don't you?
100%, mate. I think Bo Stock's my backup week, my backup 7.75 this week.
I hate this game for Supercoach. I'm not going to play anyone I don't have to, but you know, I don't own many of them either. So certainly no captains or vice captains in this one. The Seagulls and the Roosters. Here we go. You're going to have a go at me about the Roosters. Why don't you kick it off, mate? What are you going to say about the Seagulls?
Oh, it's nothing personal, mate. I just think the big fella scored, 81 last week versus South overseas. Mate, I think he can score 81 versus South and having, tried to somehow not actually score one. Imagine what he can do at home versus Yonwell.
$1.77 on Picklebet, Sydney Roosters. Go bet on it. That's all I'm going to say, mate. That's all I'm going to say. Tommy's always an option. He could go well. Ola Kuatu was 97 points in that first game, and I thought he was very impressive. They have named Tommy Talau, who's a cheapie for us, but obviously Saab's going to be out potentially 6 weeks. Wait on it. Just wait until he's going to get his price rising, he's not hurt, and then buy him. For the Roosters, obviously, it's a little bit of a change. We've got JWH starting in the bench. You know, White's going to be on the bench at the moment. It was interesting that they did make a point of saying that the reason Angus Crichton wasn't in the round one side was because of a groin injury, and he's still got that at the moment that's lingering. So maybe he is meant to be coming back into the side on the bench in the next couple of weeks. So that'll be interesting. It's also interesting to see Dom Young play his first game for the Roosters. So I quite like this one, Billy. I think there could be some points in this one. And you talk about, you know, Tommy Trbojevic that you're going to captain. There is a few people, including Savs on the SC experience, that went Teddy. And I thought Teddy for 71 points in round one looked very good, past the eye test. I could see him doing well in this one as well.
Mate, he had an absolute blinder last week and scored 71. Someone like Natrell and Turbo turned up, 50% of the time compared to Teddy and scored 10 points more. I've got all the respect in the world for Savs, but I don't see how you can even own him, let alone captain him.
Those are fighting words, mate. Those are fighting words. Yeah, he's got an 80 average against the Seagulls for his career, which is, you know, pretty up there, top half a dozen or so.
Is that the tail end of it, though?
Max score of 162. You know, even if he gives you half of that, 81 points. I think that he's primed. He scored 89 points last year against the Seagulls and 71, average 80 against them, basically. So I think he does like playing the Seagulls, Teddy. He's had good games even last year against them. And I think that he's in for a good one as well. So battle of the fullbacks here. I think there's points in this game, though. It's going to be interesting. But we do have to move on, so it's not the longest podcast in the world. Dolphins and the Dragons. Oh, jeez. I'll tell you what, the Dragons looked good, but they played a team that looked really bad. The Dolphins looked really bad, and they didn't even play a team that was that good. I don't know what to make of this. I just got to say, you know, the Hammer ended up scoring well when he looked like he had an absolutely awful game. So at least he had that going for him.
What did he end up on at the end?
It ended up on 79, which was like really good. Like I think that the real life stuff he did wrong, like he basically butchered 3 tries and he also missed a couple of really bad tackles, including the one hand flick from Labor that bamboozled him. But none of that translated to Supercoach, right? So he still scored 79 points. Because he had his attacking stats and he's had a heap of base attack as well. So it's a good score. Against the Dragons, he could do really well. But the one that I am really keen to talk to you about in this one is actually on the other side, on the wing. Zach Lomax on the wing. 39 raw base, goal kicking, 108 points, 630,000. With the points that were put on the Dolphins last week, I think that some astute coaches are rightly looking at him as a real big pod play to get in this week, even after only one game.
Lomax. Well, he did have a bit of a lull, a year or two or three, but the ability has always been there. But I remember when he first came out, so it wasn't just the rookie price. He had the goal kicking. He was reasonably consistent, and then he had the that little right-handed flick. Like he's got that Cardi type right-handed offload. He's always looking dangerous. If they can repeat what they did in the first round, mate, then certainly left field option.
He's such an outstanding. He had 7 tackle breaks, 2 line breaks, 1 offload, and 1 try. And he also had like 25 runs. Like he was ridiculous on the wing. That was always a question, you know, is his game going to be worse at wing than what it was at centre? Because at centre he had really good base. But he just ended up running the ball a heap more and having more try-scoring opportunities. So I really like him. They don't have a bye until round 11. They've got a real juicy matchup this week, but they do have some other games coming up as well. Round 6 against the Tigers looks pretty good. And really, like this run of games they've got, they don't play a top 8 side aside from Newcastle in round 5 until they hit the Warriors in round 7. So it is one of those things, Billy, where if you said before that you need to take a punt on guys and go left field, Lomax could be one of those guys that could really change your season at the moment. And I'm happy to say that because this week against the Dolphins, I'm shit scared not owning him. I'm just glad that he's only going to be a few percent owned.
Yeah, it just seems like when you put it that way, it seems like a goal-kicking Karaz now. Very end time.
It is a little bit like that, isn't it? But it's only one game sample size, so I get too ahead of ourselves. Eh?
Yeah. I know it's only one game sample size, but you got to remember it's a proven gun that is proven to goal kicking, proven at tackle busting, has a higher work rate. Now moving to a position where he's going to get more opportunity at a line breaks tries and more opportunity at kick returns and tackle busting. So it's one of those rare occasions where I'd be more than happy to get it on him straight away. It's just the price and the fact that there's lots of other things you can do.
The price is the issue, yes. Yes, I mean, there is one other guy in this Dragons side that looked fantastic in the first game, and that was Little. I had Little at one point, and then went, "Oh, they're going to have a bench hooker, so I'm not going to put him in my side." He still played 68 minutes, and he ended up scoring 71 points. Now, admittedly, he had some attack there, but he still had a 41 raw base. He passed the eye test a little bit, and if he's going to get those type of minutes, he becomes a little bit of an option. He did have a try assist and a line break, but that is a sort of attack that we've seen from Little when he was in the juniors and coming through at the Tigers. So if he can resurrect that type of attacking game with a 40 on base, then he becomes a bit of an option at 458,000. I'm actually looking at him next week, potentially, if I can see the minutes again, where maybe if Robson fails a little bit, I can save 100 grand by going Robson down a little next week. So I'll be watching with great intent this week on how he goes.
Oh, mate, I'll tell you what, if him and Lomax punch a same output this week, I'd be very tempted to go down to him and find someone to upgrade to Lomax.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? There is a couple of options like Little that present themselves with where you can save so much money to put elsewhere and you can still not lose too many points. And it's interesting. I'm watching round 2, though, before I actually make a move on him. This could be a really high-scoring one, I reckon, though. I think the Dragons could put on points. I can't really talk about him as an option, but I do want to finish off by mentioning Tyrell Sloan. He's had a little bit of a checkered career where at times he's not been great. But I tell you what, he's come out this week and had an absolute blinder of a game and played fantastic. And he scored 103 points and turned up. And he did that with an 18 base again, which we know and love from Tyrell Sloan. But his attack was very slick. And he could carve up this week as well. He only had 12 runs last week, but he had 3 tries and 2 line breaks. And the Dolphins gave up so much with their defence.
Yeah, seems like he's turned a bit of a corner, although give it another. He's the classic example of a player you want to give another 3, 4, 5, 7 weeks as opposed to Lomax.
Maybe 3 months, but, you know.
I originally had him last year in the same bucket as Hammer, like just really low work rate, just really needs to sort of accelerate and get the ball in space. But Hammer's just certainly taken off, but I can't see this guy taking off. But that's the same mole. Low work rate can turn up from time to time, just not as much as the Dolphin mate.
Yeah, it's just a fullback only that kills him. But geez, in draft, if you got him, you're sitting very pretty. I think he's going to have a very good year based on last week. But that is the podcast, Billy. So thank you very much for jumping on for TLT round two. We will get you on in the coming week sometime to come back. But you got a bit of time off, big fella. So put your feet up, enjoy, and watch those Roosters smash Manly.
Thanks, mate. I actually enjoyed this one tonight because I learned something I actually didn't realise at Lana because it's on the wing. So 24 hours.
Don't give that away. They'll think that we don't know what we're talking about. Thanks, mate. Well, everyone tuning in, you can grab the podcast, stream it, download it, share it around on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon. We are everywhere. Follow us on X, NRL underscore SC underscore All-Stars. Jump on our sponsors, Picklebet, fantastic betting partner of the All-Stars podcast. Sign up with an account today. Put All-Stars as your affiliate code and away you go. They'll take great care of you because they'll see you're one of our listeners. And also jump on oneworldcourier.com.au. Use All-Stars to quote where you found them, and they will find some great rates for you to start off with as well if you own a business or work for a business that has any shipping needs. But it is round two. Enjoy second week of the footy, the first full round we get in one weekend, which is going to be a banger of a round. Enjoy doing your trades and your super coaching. Can't wait to chat about it all again next week. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.